You're with Jason Burmes on today's News Talk TNT.
Perception versus reality. That's where I want to kick it off here tonight. Now, believe it or not, I don't love talking about Donald Trump, but the current state of the world, the current not only news but election cycle that we're in, really doesn't give me much of a choice. And the reason I'm choosing this story to kick it off is because Donald Trump, love him or hate him individually, I have seen across the country, in the vast majority of places, even places where I'm told he must be hated, he must be despised, he is the tyrant of the universe, he gets a whole lot of love. And the clips are going viral. It's Donnie T in Harlem with children and adults alike chanting, four more years, four more years. Now, let's get it straight. Donald Trump isn't one to be hanging out in Harlem most of the time. That's not a real thing. I think that this was, in fact, a political stunt. But he went to go visit the individual who had a store there for years, was a legal immigrant. Imagine that, coming to the country the right way, doing the thing, working hard, having your own business. And then someone comes in and not only tries to steal from you, but beat you to death. You defend yourself, not even with a gun, which was in this man's total right, but with a knife, and you end up killing the assailant who came across the counter behind and attacked you physically in what is known as the urban jungle. What happens to that guy? Well, when you've got awesome prosecutors in New York City like we do, they tried to charge him and put him in jail. Now again, perception versus reality. The reality was that man defended himself lawfully for his business, and forget lawfully, humanely, all right? Our rights are not given by the government. They don't tell us how we can defend ourselves. They're God. And when somebody else attacks you, you have 1,000% the right to defend yourself. The reality of the situation is they tried to put him in jail. Now, because perception shifted, really Tucker Carlson was at the helm of this one, showing night after night that this guy was being wrongly prosecuted, he was let go. They decided not to prosecute him, kind of hinted they might go back to it, but really wanted to make what was essentially, I wouldn't even call him a hero, right? He's in his own self-interest. He's within his own rights, but they tried to make him the villain. The same thing they've done to Donnie T. Guys, I just want everybody to know, Miami, it's got liberals. Every single time he walks into an arena in the UFC down in Florida, standing ovation. And I have contended for a very, very, very long time that New York more than likely voted for Donald Trump, not once, but twice. But we're not allowed to say that because the perception is it's a blue state. The reality is they have voting machines there. They're as gangster as Truck. Look, you look at the behavior of Andrew Capo Cuomo, especially during the COVID-1984 nightmare. You don't get more gangster. And it's not because he has an Italian surname. The guy came down authoritarian style, okay? He then put sick people in nursing homes, getting other elderly people sick. All right, was given an Emmy for it. I thought you only give Emmys to actors, and he was America's governor. Meanwhile, New York handled it the most poorly when you're talking about freedom. And what? When he finally had to be taken out, none of those realities were put forth. Instead, it was about him grabbing some ass, maybe, and being sexually misconductive with women. And then they install Kathy Hochul. No dice. The reality is that's not a good guy, despite the perception they would have you try to believe. But I'm just saying this, if you want a weekend full of truth, a weekend truth festival, If you'd like to see all of your favorite freedom fighters on the stage across the weekend, then listen up. The Weekend Truth Festival will feature such speakers as Katie Hopkins, Katie Shermani, Dolores Cahill, Matt Letizier, Mark Atwood, David Clues, Allegedly Dave, Sovereign Pete, and many others. All of this across one weekend on the 3rd, 4th, and 5th of May in Workington, near the Lake District in the UK. All you need to do is bring a tent, a sleeping bag, and some good vibes. Always love those good vibes. As food stalls, workshops, bushcraft, and amenities will all be provided on site. For more information and where to find out to reserve your place at the festival, please visit weekendtruth.co.uk. But don't hang around, because only a limited number of places are still available. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with the news and Adam Ruckus after this.
Delivering the facts.
The source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
National Public Radio, NPR, has repeatedly suspended a senior editor who authored an online essay published last week, went viral, in which he argued that the network had lost American trust because of liberal bias in their coverage. Here with the story, joining me now is TNT News producer Adam Clark. Bring in the ruckus. Adam, tell us about the story.
Well, I'm just shocked to hear this, Jason. I'm totally surprised that in the year 2024, a wonderful publication such as NPR, and a wonderful outlet, after being one of their 25 year long senior editors, coming out and doing some real journalism, some real work. Yep, they're not going to reward the guy. Instead, they're going to punish him. This is wild. I'm sure they know how bad this looks. Oh, rest in peace, NPR. This is Yuri Berliner, the senior business editor for NPR. He did write a rather, well, it wasn't even scathing. He just reported the truth. I mean, he was just like, hey, look, we got a problem over there. It was an essay that he was published for the Free Press last week. He said in his essay that NPR had allowed a quote-unquote liberal bent to influence its coverage, and that was causing the outlet to steadily lose credibility with audiences. He was concerned. He cares about his job and about the network that he does work for. So I'm not sure how he feels about them today, being suspended without pay for 5 days. The essay that he wrote reignited the criticism that many prominent conservatives have long leveled against NPR, and prompted newsroom leadership to implement monthly internal reviews of the network's coverage. This, according to NPR themselves. Berliner's essay also angered many of his colleagues, and it exposed NPR's new chief executive, Catherine Mayer, to a string of attacks from conservatives, mostly online, over her past social media posts. In a statement on Monday to NPR, Mayer refuted Berliner's claims by underscoring NPR's commitment to objective coverage of national issues. Mayer said, quote, "In America, everyone is entitled to free speech as a private citizen. What matters is NPR's work and my commitment as its CEO, public service, editorial independence, and the mission to serve all of the American public. NPR is independent, beholden to no party, and without commercial interests," end quote. Berliner is a senior business editor who has worked at NPR for 25 years. As I mentioned about this whole essay thing, one of his arguments is that he made on Free Press that, quote, "People at every level of NPR have comfortably coalesced around the progressive worldview," end quote. While he claims that NPR has always had a quote-unquote liberal bent ever since he was hired at the outlet, he wrote that it has first since lost its, quote, "open-minded spirit," end quote, and hence, quote, "an audience that reflects America," end quote. The Peabody Award-winning journalist, who just got suspended for 5 days without pay, highlighted what he viewed as examples of the network's partisan coverage of several important, one might argue, major news events, including the origins of COVID-19, the conflict taking place in Gaza, the Hunter Biden's laptop. Anyone remember that one? Berliner also lambasted NPR's diversity, equity, and inclusion policies, DEI, as reflected both within its newsroom and in its coverage, as making race and identity, quote, "paramount in nearly every aspect of the workplace." He wrote, quote, "All this reflected a broader movement in the culture of people clustering together based on ideology or a characteristic of birth," end quote. In response to the essay, many prominent conservatives and Republicans, including former President Donald Trump, launched renewed attacks at NPR for what they perceive as partisan coverage. Conservative activist Christopher Rufo, in particular, targeted Mayer for messages she posted to social media years before joining the network, her first at a news organization. Among the posts singled out were a 2020 tweet that called Trump racist. So, yeah, we've got a lot that going on right now, Jason. But yes, I'm shocked to see that the way they're going to respond is let's just temporarily suspend the guy. If I were Mr. Berliner, I would probably be looking for a new job. But what say you, my friend?
Whatever will we do without a publicly funded news organization that talks like it's on Thorazine as they report bombings across the world? I'm not sure. Here's my issue with the story, okay? When he talks about narratives, I don't know across the world. I'm not sure. Here's my issue with the story, okay? When he talks about narratives, I don't know that it's liberal or left-wing to not report the truth about a laptop concerning a ton of crimes. Now, it may be politically motivated, it may be on behalf of an agenda, but I would argue most people, at least still cognitively thinking with critical thinking skills, would say, wait a minute, that's not exactly right. That's narrative management. Now, when you talk about the identity politics, obviously that is out there and that is leaning in that direction. But the COVID-1984 nightmare and the origins, not sure how that's politically motivated unless you are pointing your finger directly at the military-industrial complex in collusion with global institutions such as the United Nations and the World Health Organizations. Now, is it more than, is it Democrats that are now touting those organizations? Sure, but Republicans sure have in the past and still do when it fits their narrative and their purpose. You know, you mentioned Gaza, for instance, and what's going on there. Anytime I hear some conservative talking head going, Hamas supporters gathered in New York City to protest, excuse me? Hamas supporters? Or is it people that don't like a bunch of dead people in the Middle East? The framing, the language on both sides is utterly absurd. And I think probably the most disappointing thing about something like NPR is that our tax dollars are directly siphoned off into it. Now, if you want to be a true liberal or left-leaning organization, we have those. In fact, when I put out Loose Change with the guys all the way back in 2005, Pacifica Radio comes to mind. For those not familiar with Pacifica, it's been around for a very, very long time, mostly left coast. But the way they fund themselves is not through taxpayer funding. Instead, they have drives and they are truly funded by their listeners and viewers. I can respect that. I don't have to necessarily agree with everything they're putting out there or maybe the overall tone of the network. But guess what, Adam? It's not on my dime and it's not on your dime either. That's the real regulation. We should be saying, hey, our tax dollars aren't putting it out to some guy that's been a veteran journalist in your organization, says the truth, and then you suspend him. How about we suspend NPR permanently and make them, I don't know, earn their keep?
Yeah. And to be fair, as with most things, the official reason isn't like, hey, we don't like what you said, buddy, so we're letting you go. He was officially suspended for not seeking prior approval for outside work with other news outlets, which is a requirement, apparently, for NPR's new journalists. They also are accusing Berliner of releasing, quote unquote, proprietary information about the network's demographics in the now viral essay. I know, how dare you? I'm guessing somewhere along the lines, because I'm familiar with this in other places, not here. TNT is very different. One of those NDAs, the infamous non-disclosure agreements. You know what I'm talking about, Jason. It's just a way to try to control people so things like this don't happen, right?
I mean, again, if you're signing a non-disclosure agreement in any job, there are going to be limitations to what you can say. And if you go beyond those limitations, unfortunately, there may be lawsuits. I'm not so sure this guy went beyond the limitations. Maybe they don't want to sue him yet for that bad look. But the idea that, like, the proof is in the pudding and we've got some kind of proprietary way to make the news and he can't disclose these things is a bunch of Johnny nonsense. In fact, again, since it's on the taxpayer dime, shouldn't we be able to audit that information ourselves? Shouldn't we be seeing who their actual audience is? But that kind of gets back to that argument I led with, perception versus reality. And the perception they'd like you to have, if you're listening to NPR, you're a reasonable, smart person in America, and you love your country, you know what's going on. If you criticize it, you're probably a MAGA-supporting lunatic hell-bent on white supremacy and doing your own research. Adam, we will see you in the second hour. I like to do my own research. I don't think it's a bad thing. We're about to bring somebody on that also does his own research. We're going to be talking Elon Musk and more. You're not going to want to miss it. More TNT Radio after this.
TNT's Patrick Henningsen.
Joe Biden's a bit of an anomaly in that respect. Normally, the incumbent is running a lot stronger going into the second term or the re-election bid. That's not the case with Joe Biden. We see a lot of people fleeing from his support base, even from his own party, which is unusual. And there's a lot of good reason for that on the foreign policy side, which we'll be discussing throughout this program, but also domestically as well. They haven't been able to tackle inflation in the United States, and that's a big problem. So this isn't, voters aren't, they're not caring anymore about COVID. They don't care anymore about vaccine mandates. As we've said before, this mainly is going to be, it's going to come down to being three things: gas, groceries, and World War III.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's News Talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live. The Net Zero Con will leave millions of citizens dependent on state handouts.
It isn't a theory.
It's an agenda. There is no climate emergency. On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we are now joined by activist, analyst, and all-around good guy, Matt Baker. Matt, in the past, when we've had you on the program, we've talked technology and especially Elon Musk. We're going to continue to go down that path today with a couple of these news stories out there. Tesla laying off a bunch of folks. A lot of people thought it was just going to be foreign, but no, people in Texas got a nice little letter, and about 10% of that company is being let go. I don't think that this is surprising to myself. I know that there was a lot of hype train around the fact that Tesla had moved operations into Texas. But the bottom line is, with this company and with that model, and really what Elon has exposed outwardly, is with these technologies, we're going to see more and more automation. And that means less and less human beings working there, correct?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the inverse of what Henry Ford did when he made his paid his people enough money to actually buy one of his vehicles. That was supposedly the revolutionary concept. And now we're doing it completely opposite. Let's make the cars with robots to make sure nobody can afford to buy them, except maybe the robot polishers. You know, they'll be doing good. I heard that the Tesla truck is taking a hit, too. Apparently, it's got a bunch of recalls and something unsafe about it. Old Musker nuts. What's he going to do?
Now, look, a lot of these things, especially with Tesla, in my mind, have been kind of publicity stunts. And they're really along that same line of perception versus reality. The perception is, if you drive a Tesla, you love the environment, you care about the earth, you're self-aware, and you're driving a top-tier product. Now, no doubt, electronically and technologically, it is pretty top-tier, but it also comes with a price. Obviously, the batteries are not only dangerous in an accident, but in order to harvest the lithium to make them work, we have modern day slavery across the world. Whenever you bring this up, a lot of people just want to completely ignore it. So I ask you, is your carbon footprint more important than 8-year-olds slaving away in lithium mines so that you can save the earth? It's a question I'm not hearing a lot.
Of course, as long as it's for a good cause, you can have slavery, you can have, you know, $1 trillion environmental impacts. I mean, people just toiling away in pits, as long as it's liberal and loving. I mean, as long as it's good for the environment, right? Isn't it mind-boggling? Like, what is the deal with that? Like, can they not set up real mines? Is there a reason why they have to claw that stuff with their hands while only 5-year-olds can dig in those pits? It's pretty weird, isn't it?
It is a little odd. You know, you'd think they would have automated that if they were so concerned about humanity.
No. We need a certain amount of slavery going on. There's got to be toil to, like, keep the machines happy, I think. Otherwise, they're not going to give him the new tech upgrade, I think, perhaps.
And again, when I look at Tesla, this is another instance of the government picking winners and losers. I'm sorry. This is not a capitalist firm, okay? Mm-hmm. I've talked about it numerous times on this program. I've really been harping on it for years and years and years, that EVs have been around on some level since the late 90s. Now, a lot of people forget that in the very beginning, not only didn't they go far, you were lucky to get 70 or so miles to a charge, but you couldn't outright buy them. If people want to see that, they can watch Who Killed the Electric Car. It was narrated by Ed Begley, but essentially you could only lease these vehicles, and at the end of the day, they ended up being destroyed. You could not keep them. That changed, but as Tesla became the forerunner, it was our government subsidies that allowed that company to become what it is today. And I would argue it's the continued subsidization of that company that has allowed it to grow even beyond just the car, the Cybertruck, and into bio nanotech, automation, and even humanoid robots, Matt.
Indeed. And in fact, not just government subsidies. If you think about it, it's actually the people with gas guzzlers, so to speak, regular trucks, people who actually work for a living, who need a truck that can actually pull weight and go distances. They're actually paying the subsidy with the cost of their vehicle, because they have to create these, their fleets have to have a certain overall mileage, you know, per gallon output, so they can drop it down with their EVs and with these little chintzy cars. And then the people who buy the normal cars, which would be normally a little bit more expensive, are now cranked way up to cover the costs of these other vehicles that they're creating, which really aren't sustainable in themselves. I would say that in about 5 years, we're going to start seeing a whole lot of these Teslas just literally been scrapped. Like, no one is going to want to spend the money for a brand new battery for a car that's 10, 15 years old and is not cool anymore. It's just not going to be worth it. They're not going to want to do it.
And that's another thing that they do not talk about, is the waste that is going to be created by those batteries, by those abandoned vehicles. And you really actually spoke to another aspect of this. Look, back before 2020 and the COVID-1984 nightmare, and what is really hyperinflation in this country, you could get a pretty good truck, brand new, $45,000, $50,000, still not super cheap. Try buying that same truck today. You're talking $75,000, $80,000. You want the bells and whistles? You're talking about a $100,000 automobile. It wasn't that long ago that those type of prices were really reserved for the small penis crowd who wanted sports cars.
That everlasting small penis crowd. So good for the markets, though, really, aren't they? That middle-aged man who's got all that money burning a hole in his pocket because his small penis certainly is not.
We're having fun here today, folks.
We're having fun. Hey, speaking of Elon and his beautiful cars with all those cameras on it, did you hear that he was also handing over all that information with if this Section 702 going through with the warrantless spying? They're also now he's giving over all this Tesla camera footage from all, like, think on every neighborhood. There's 28 cameras on each one of these Teslas, and he's handing over that footage to those things. That's another warm, fuzzy feeling.
Well, it feeds into the track trace database society that's been built over time. And it's so funny, when I'm driving my little crap box, I drive a 2011 Fiesta, everybody, just to let everybody know, I ride along and I'm constantly hearing insurance companies that want you to put the little camera and the software in there. And then you hear them, you're going to pay less on your car insurance. And then just like anything, you hear the really quick, most people do pay a little less if they're safe drivers. Like, there's always a caveat. No,
yeah. They or just in the future, you're going to be forced to do this, and they and there will be no opt out. It's just basically going to be, we're not going to insure you if we can't watch and track and trace you the whole time. It's just not safe. You know, everything is.
And again, that's what autonomous vehicles are all about, taking the power away from the individual, from the consumer, and putting it in the hands of a consolidated authoritarian power. We got to hit a break. We're going to hit the big headlines, and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about new users on Twitter, X. Guess what? You're going to be paying whether you like it or not. More with Matt Baker after this. This is TNT Radio Live.
Now, big news. TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The U.S. will not engage Russian forces in Ukraine by shooting down drones and missiles, unlike its recent defense aid to Israel against Iran, according to White House National Security spokesman John Kirby. Senate Republicans are intensively lobbying against Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer's potential move to table or dismiss the impeachment charges against Secretary of Homeland Security Alejandro Mayorkas.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa.
Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
So I was just recently automatically charged for my blue check mark over at X. And honestly, it was something that I did not want to acquiesce to. I could care less about the check mark. I didn't care about it when it was a status symbol and you couldn't purchase it. The problem is, once the Musker dude took it over, guess what? My ability to post any videos that were over 2 minutes and 22 seconds went away. I also could not live stream from the platform anymore. So I bit the bullet, I paid the fee, and it did take, I think, about 6 weeks for me to get that ever so precious blue check mark. But now, new Twitter accounts are going to be expected to pay a fee for this service. We've really seen the monetization of Twitter, I would say, go supernova in the last year or so with Musk picking it up. And I expect more microtransactions. The question is, in my mind, who's actually going to be able to monetize their accounts honestly? Because we know the shadow bans still exist. We still have the context blurbs underneath posts. And I'm sorry, I just don't trust an outlet that when you post a video of your skies being sprayed in crosshatch patterns all across, these are contrails and they're nothing more than water vapor. When you get that fact check from that platform, that should let you know all you need to, that this isn't really about free speech and it's not really about reality. It's about a profit and, in my mind, possibly control, Matt.
I just want to know what it is. And I actually said, I was on Alex Jones today, and I'm trying hard to be on Team Humanity and be go with Trump and go with Elon, and they're all on the team and we're going to win. And I kind of feel like I want to like not hate on them too much until after the election, because I'm trying not to like infight here. But guys, Everyone's in a cult. Like, how can people go around pretending to themselves that it's a free speech platform? I mean, you know, I mean, my account literally says it's shadow banned. It's ghost banned now. Like, if you look it up, it's like, oh yeah, you're ghost banned. And then I will have 120,000 followers and I will get like one comment on a post. And the story about my wife's blood, I think I mentioned last time I was on, that has got a warning on it saying that it's, you know, it's sexual content. Meanwhile, I have literal sex bots on my page every day and it can't say, you know, my P in bio, like you can't create your algorithm to figure out, you know, to get rid of these porn bots on my thing. But you've got to tell me my picture of my wife in the hospital is somehow offensive to you when we know it's basically the same old thing. It's bad for business because the big pharma doesn't like it. And so they want it shut down. But yet people are locked in this crazy cult where Elon Musk can do no wrong. And no matter what he does, he'll do it right in front of you. They're like, oh, he loves us. He's here to save us. It's like, he's all about the carbon tax. The carbon tax is the literal basis of the entire New World Order. You need a global tax, a global carbon tax to create this food for this global government. And he's all about it. He's all about microchips. He's all about autonomous cars. He's all about surrounding the planet. Like, if you look at what he's doing, it literally looks like what you would see as an alien invasion. I mean, he literally is like, let's put satellites around the world. Let's track everybody. Let's bring in autonomous drones. Let's microchip everybody. I mean, but he's loving and everybody buys into it. I don't really understand it.
I don't understand it either. And, you know, you talk about that network that he's built. It's now, again, been reported in the mainstream that it's not just Starlink and it's not just DARPA's Blackjack program that is being released via SpaceX. And remember, Starlink is not just communications and internet globally. It's being utilized for warfare in Ukraine openly, and it's being used to hook into the drone systems there. Well, now the cat's out of the bag, and the Defense Department has cut a deal with Elon himself to create their global spy satellite network. Yet I have not seen one alternative media pundit or otherwise even report on that story. It's almost a month old. So it is out in the open. And you know, earlier you talked about being a robot polisher. For those that are not familiar with that reference, yes, Klaus Nutschwab himself actually said, and I think it was on Charlie Rose while they were talking about automation and the coming robotics. He goes, not everybody can be a robot polisher, Charlie. What do we do?
But the problem is, what are we going to do with all these people? We're useless eaters. I mean, not everybody can be a robot polisher.
I mean, this is what they think. I mean, guys, they're trying to put us out to pasture here, and we're like cheering it on, like, yay, this is great. Just as long as the guys like who's doing it pretends to be right wing and posts a meme every once in a while. I mean, you know, Bill Gates came out and he was like saying, oh, we want to lower the world's population, you know. And so all he did was come out and say, hey, I'm all about more people. And everyone's like, hey, he's got to be a good guy. It's like all you had to do was like basically rebrand Coca-Cola and everybody's jumping on board. It hurts my cerebral cortex to really get behind, like, to see how right wingers can be so easily just we're almost as bad as the left, really, how easily we're just drug along by little cause celebs and the thing of the day. I mean,
well, that's why I'm not a part of that. And I can't be. And, you know, let's talk about Bill Gates for a moment.
Yeah, because there was Bill a time. Gates. Let's hate on Bill.
Yeah. Let's talk about when he was a superstar. Where he was just some kind of nerd, and hey man, Microsoft Windows 98 was a game changer. I got to admit, when it went from 98 to 2000 and Millennium, and they had all these cool, I was like, "Ooh, I'm on board." Mm-hmm. Not to mention, brought me the Xbox, and I'm like, "All right, I like this Xbox. I like all this technology." Now you fast forward just a teeny weeny ainsy bincy bit, and well, I start learning about the weather modification. Wow, I start learning about the hate and lies shots even then. And we're not talking about mRNA, but just shots in general. And then other things like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation growing HIV in corn as part of GMO experiments. These were things that were taking place. Those concerned me. But then when I saw the partnership between Microsoft and the U.S. military via their Kinect system. Now, this is before everybody had magic boxes everywhere and smart TVs everywhere. This was a device, and still is, with three cameras that was always on in your home and directed at your family. And actually, I did a small piece. I wasn't working for InfoWars at the time, but for them, where I called up the establishment that was working with the with Microsoft specifically via the U.S. military, and I was basically put in contact with one of their PR people. They refused to answer questions on the phone. They wanted a list of questions, and then they gave, you know, pretty basic answers
boxed
out there.
But it answers, took, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, the PR talking points. Well, it took another decade or more for the general populace to wake up to Bill Gates. I don't think that we have another decade in regards to Elon Musk. I hope people wake up sooner rather than later, Matt. We got to go. Tell people where they can find your stuff, support your work.
All right. You can get me on X, or Elon's platform, at slave_2_liberty. And I'm also on band.video at just slave2liberty, the number two on both. So it's great having me on here. And I love seeing you all the time. And we get together for our weekly hate on on the Elon Fest.
Hey, I'm not trying to hate, but all I'm saying is reality, and we can't fall for the perception.
What about, like, how is it that he can pretend to be a 4-year-old child and nobody on the right wing calls it out? If Bill Gates had done that he was like proposing as a 4-year-old child, you would never hear the end of it, bro. You would never.
Matt Baker killing it as always, brother. We got to take that break. We're going to be back with more TNTRadio.live after this.
I didn't ask to be thrown in the streets with nowhere to go. I didn't think I'd survive. But I did ask for help, and Covenant House was there for me.
1 in 10 young adults will experience a form of homelessness this year. For these kids who didn't ask to be put in this unthinkable situation, Covenant House is there.
Covenant House helped me break the cycle of homelessness in my family. They gave me the love that I needed.
Over 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed tonight. When youth who are experiencing homelessness have a hot meal, a safe place to sleep, medical care, and love, they can overcome heartbreaking challenges and have a brighter future.
They just really genuinely just wanted to help me succeed, and I'm succeeding. I'm a speaker, I'm an author. Covenant House really helped me and really helped mold me into the woman I am today.
If you or someone you love is asking for help, go to safeplacetosleep.org today.
She used to dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams. Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
You're with Jason Burmis on today's News Talk, TNT.
And now we are joined by a true whistleblower, a military and combat veteran out of Australia. You can tell he's a true whistleblower because he's been persecuted and prosecuted for revealing the war crimes of others. We're with David McBride. First off, sir, thank you so much for joining us. And for those that are not familiar with your story, can you just give us a brief synopsis?
Yeah, thanks very much for having me on the show. Sorry, I'm at the airport and there's an announcement. I hope you can hear. I was an officer in the British Army, and then I was an officer in the Australian Army with a legal specialty. I actually believe that the commanders, the generals, were probably covering up war crimes or at least failing in their duty. The war in Afghanistan was being run in a very poor way. And I tried to get some sort of accountability within the system. I was just ignored. And I was bullied after that, and then I went to the media. I'm now facing many, many years in prison. The case has been going for 5 years, and I'm really trying to get accountability at the top of our military organizations for the failures at the bottom. Julian Assange's case is kind of close to my heart.
And as it should be, you know, right now we've got this resolution out there in this country that may be the last hope. But for me, just the idea that we are charging somebody in another country that is not a U.S. citizen with treason with the Espionage Act is already ludicrous. And then you look to why we're doing that, and it is because they exposed the war crimes of the powerful, not just in Afghanistan, but beyond. In fact, WikiLeaks continued to do great work while Assange was in Ecuador, but now we're 5 years deep in Belmarsh and at the very end of this extremely corrupt appellate process, where it seems the judge is ready to rule that Julian can be extradited as long as the United States ensures that he's not able to commit suicide. This is absolute lunacy, is it not?
Yeah, no, it is. And the ADX facility in Colorado, where he'll be going, is a death sentence. It's basically a little locked, you know, cell, like something out of a sci-fi movie where you will have no more human contact for the rest of his life and be stuck in this cell, and whatever small privileges you get, if that's the word, are taken away for the most spurious reasons. The assurances mean nothing, and they can say, oh, if they once they get him to the United States, things have changed. The idea, as you said, it's quite obscene that they say they're not even guaranteeing him First Amendment rights. So they're charging him for espionage under U.S. law. He's not a U.S. citizen, so it doesn't make sense. And then they're going to say, oh, well, you can be charged under U.S. law, but you don't even have U.S. rights. That is, we're not going to even allow you necessarily to have the First Amendment rights that all U.S. citizens have. You can argue it, is all they've said, but we may turn down your argument. So it is pretty, they're not worth the paper they're written on, and it's really weasel words. And yeah, it's a real disgrace. The Australian government needs to do more. There's no doubt about it.
They absolutely do. But we also have to remember that this whole thing started with false sexual assault allegations. You know, it didn't even start at the point of espionage and political crimes that drove him into the embassy in the first place. And I would also argue one of the largest failures of the Trump administration was not ensuring, because he had not been charged yet, that Julian Assange was a free man and that this Justice Department was not going after him. I mean, he sent Dana Rohrabacher over there as an envoy. It was reported that Assange refused to give up his source for the DNC emails amongst the Russiagate probe, which, hey, I have utter respect for. I mean, that could have maybe been his out. And he said, no, I'm a journalist. I've already said Russia did not do this. Obviously, you had the allusion to the fact that it may have been Seth Rich, as he specifically talked about that individual and also talked about giving up a bounty if they were able to find those involved with his murder. But all of that's by the wayside. And when I look at Trump and that failure, it's not lost on me that it is now very ironic that he too is being charged with the Espionage Act in this country, which is also unprecedented. So can you speak to the fact that now all of a sudden the Espionage Act is on the table in two very different but very connected and important cases?
Yeah, yeah, and you reap what you sow, as they say, and you're right, you know, but that saying, oh, they came for the journalists and I didn't protest because I wasn't a journalist. They came for the socialists, etc. That's right. You know, Trump undoubtedly probably didn't want to do a lot of these things, but the sort of deep state operative said, you're either going to do it or, you know, something bad's going to happen to you. But you're right, that was a weakness. I'm the same. Julian Assange went up in my estimation when I heard that he wouldn't give up that name. And it goes, he is really, he's being tortured now, and I'm surprised he's still alive. And it was a very brave thing for him to do. And also, and the Vault 7 revelations were quite interesting because they showed that the operatives, the security operatives that were planning Assange's downfall, said we can't just let him go to prison that because he could become a martyr. And they planned all the sort of sexual allegations and other things to smear him so he wouldn't become a martyr simply by imprisoning him. That was laid out in the email trails whichever sleazy subcontractor was dealing with it. So it's the idea that this hasn't been more outrage in the mainstream media is because who knows who they're going to come for next.
And you just talked about the aspects of subcontractors. Some of the other revelations that we found out over the last several years was British intelligence, the Central Intelligence Agency, all talking about and planning not only the possible kidnap of Assange, but his assassination through these type of subcontractors via like a plausible deniability circle. And more we see those circles. You talk about whether or not Trump had been threatened or not. Well, we know that Pompeo absolutely wanted Assange and that he swayed in that direction. And then we also have the taped conversations between Cassandra Fairbanks and the assistant of Rick Grenell. And he stated that basically you had these operatives that were showing both Donald Trump and his son Don Jr. Photographs of people that had been killed because of the information, at least they said, that WikiLeaks had put out into the public arena. Yet when we go to the actual court cases, in court it was proven again and again and again that Assange was extremely careful with the names that were redacted and put out, and he put nobody in danger and caused no deaths. That's never been proven in a court of law.
Yeah, I know. And they keep on saying that. It's obviously, you have to marvel sometimes at the US government's information warriors, because I still meet people who, sometimes people come up when we're protesting and want to fight you, and they say, Assange, killed people. He killed operatives. And you're like, no, he didn't. That's a smear. That's a very successful smear. But people believe it. And it's I saw this firsthand in my own job in the military, because one of the things you used to do as a military lawyer was to approve what they call information ops, psyops, and such things. And I think the extent of the subcontractors involved in that is not even fully known. I mean, armies of the government is using taxpayer money to have bots on Twitter and other places, X, saying, I don't like Julian Assange or this, or I don't like David McBride, or they should go to jail. And people get swayed. And of course, it's not the government themselves doing it, but communications consultants who could contract to somebody else. But yeah, taxpayer money being misused, because the average person in Australia really likes Julian Assange. Well, they certainly don't want him to die at their hands when all he did was reveal embarrassing factors. And the same with me. There's no doubt that I didn't damage national security. This, talking about what went on in Afghanistan 10 years ago, a war we're not even fighting anymore. The idea, it's just embarrassing. And the thing about Assange is he embarrassed the US government by showing the world what's really going on. Not that anyone was that surprised, but and they hate that, and they consider that terrorism, because what they routinely do is so obviously criminal and obscene.
Absolutely. You mentioned the subcontractors, and I would posit even a stronger argument. I'm not sure if you've seen the article. It's about to be 3 years old, but it's exclusive inside the military's secret undercover army. And I'm just going to read for verbatim for the audience the first paragraph of this rather large article. The largest undercover force the world has ever known is the one created by the Pentagon over the past decade. Some 60,000 people now belong to this secret army, many working under masked identities and in low profile, all part of a broad program called Signature Reduction, where if you read later, it's actually an art form and it is not the official name of this program. The force, more than 10 times the size of the clandestine elements of the CIA, carries out domestic, here in the United States, and foreign assignments, both in military uniform and under civilian cover in real life and online. You talked about the bots, sometimes hiding in private businesses and consultancies, some of them household name companies. I think that we would be ignorant not to think that these are our big tech companies, are our social media companies, are our military industrial complex companies, and really any company with any kind of social or political relevance. Again, we're talking about a team of 60,000. That article's 3 years old. There's still been no hearings on that program. So, you know, talk about a plausible deniability circle and the fact that a lot of these consultancies, their roles have not been fully revealed. Our military industrial complex's role has not been even close to fully revealed in this. So how do we roll it back? You know, what do we need to do to ensure that this guy doesn't come to this country and basically be charged in a show trial? And if that does happen, is that the end of our constitutional republic here at home and almost the death blow to the possibility of global freedom?
Yeah, look, I think it is. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say if Julian Assange dies in prison or dies on the way, that's the beginning of dystopia. And that will mean, you're right, the UK got caught in the same way during the COVID, whatever you would like to call it. They had their military, I've forgotten the name of Brigade 77, I think they were called, which was the sort of PSYOPs, information ops people. One of them became a whistleblower, good on him, to say, this is not really our job as soldiers, is to get on there and tell people to comply with COVID, you know, and also, as you said, to impersonate others. And again, being in the role that I was in, I can recognize a false message when I see one. And anything which is too neat, too perfect. And yeah, if we don't stop it now, and Assange is like, he's like the pebble in the empire's shoe. They can't break him. And if we can save him, we might save the world. And if we don't, we will be in some sort of Hunger Games from then on. And the government can just put out false information. They did it. You see it with Putin. They spent 20 years demonizing him. And now the public are so misled that they could drop bombs on Russia tomorrow if no one would care, just unilaterally, you know. And they have been working the phones, working online. And they will continue to do that. So anyone who just speaks out against the government will be suddenly become a terrorist, and they'll disappear, and nothing will ever happen. And none of the media sources that we would rely on. They learned some horrible lessons from Vietnam. Not unfortunately, don't go to war, you know, for spurious reasons in Southeast Asia. But they learned the terrible lesson. If you control the media, it doesn't matter whether you win the wars. It doesn't matter whether you're the good guy, because you can just make everybody think you're the good guy and make you think you won the wars. That's the media controls the people, and that's what we're seeing now. Yeah, 60,000, it's an incredible thing. Everybody should get out there and protest for Assange. The good thing is people in Australia, I mean, everybody in Australia, 86 parliamentarians voted for him to come home. So they've done a good job, but I'm so grateful to you. I'm so grateful to TNT. You've fought the good fight against a lot of corporate pressure. I take my hat off to you. We are brothers. You people like you sticking your neck up, keep people like me and Julian Assange alive.
Well, let me just tell you right now, if we're not sticking our neck out, we're fools, because again, this isn't just about you or Julian Assange. It's about all of us. This is about freedom of speech. It's in my self-interest to point these things out. And for those that don't realize it's in their self-interest, they may be too far gone. We only got a couple minutes left in the segment. What do you think the timeline is going to be on a resolution on this, one way or another? Will we get rulings and action within the next several months, or is this something that's going to span out possibly past our presidential election here in the States?
It's a good question. Some people have told me they don't want Assange in the States, stateside, for a presidential election here. I think it's like a good thriller movie. I think it's coming to a head quite quickly. In fact, it's not impossible that there'll be some sort of plea deal in the next 3 weeks, which will be quite funny because I face my sentence in 3 weeks' time. And if Assange is given a plea deal and no prison, it would make them a bit stupid trying to put me in prison. But I think it's this year it's going to be resolved. I think maybe 3 months. These obviously things don't move quickly. And I think part of the tactic of the British courts has just been to draw it out, and on go slow. But I think now, because the Australians have made it clear, not happy. So, I think it's going to resolve itself.
David, how can people support you and keep up on your case?
I've got a GoFundMe, help Major David McBride with his help for justice. I've got a website, davidmcbride.com.au for Australia. I've got a book. Read my book. And it's quite a fun book. It's not a difficult read. And I'd be grateful. I think it's already on the TNT website. But again, the best thing, thank you to all your listeners, and thank you for you for keeping quiet. It is about all of us, you're right. And
it absolutely is. David, thank you so much for joining us. We got another power-packed hour of the show coming up. You're not going to want to leave us. Stick around for more TNT Radio.live after this.